By the time they were settled at a little cafe Han knew, sipping cups of stim tea, Han was beginning to feel as though he'd known Lando for years instead of just an hour. "So, tell me," Han said, "how did you find me, and why were you looking for me?"
"Well, I've actually seen you a time or two before," Lando admitted. "You were pointed out to me in a couple of night spots as a fair sabacc player, a good smuggler, and an excellent pilot."
Han tried, without much success, to look suitably modest. "I don't recall seeing you, Lando, but I didn't have any reason to remember, I guess. So, okay, you knew what I looked like. What happened this morning?"
"Well, last night I went by your place to talk to you, and your friend told me that he didn't think you'd be home that night." Lando gave Han a knowing smile. "But he told me you'd probably be staying with a friend at the Chance Castle. When I got there, I saw you on the street ahead of me. I followed you, intending to catch up and introduce myself, only to see Boba Fett get the drop on me," Han guessed.
"Exactly. I don't much like bounty hunters, so I followed you until I was pretty sure where he was heading. I was able to hide between you and the ship, then get the drop on Fett when he walked past."
Han nodded. "I'm real glad you did, pal.
So why were you looking for me in the first place?"
"I was playing sabacc over on Bespin a week or so ago, and one of the players threw in a marker for his ship. High-stakes game, it was."
"And you won the ship," Han guessed.
"That's right. So I want you to teach me to fly."
"Okay," Han said. "I can do that. When do you want to start?"
Lando shrugged. "How about now?"
Han and Lando walked across the windswept surface of the platform through ranks of parked vessels until Lando stopped and pointed.
"There it is. The Millennium Falcon."
Han stared across the permacrete at the modified light stock freighter, Corellian-made and engineered, model YT-1300 transport. He'd seen plenty of them before and had always liked them. Corellians were good engineers as well as good pilots. But as Han stared at this particular ship, something strange happened. Without warning, he fell suddenly, irrevocably, irretrievably in love. This ship called to him. She sang to him a siren song of speed, of maneuverability, of narrow escapes and adventures and successful smuggling runs galore. "The Millennium Falcon is going to be mine," Han thought. "Mine." The Corellian suddenly realized he was staring, mouth agape. Lando was looking at him, his eyes narrowed suspiciously. Minutes later, Han sat at the controls of Lando's new acquisition, savoring the Falcon's response as she lifted on her repulsors. Then he engaged the sublight drive. He still couldn't believe what he'd seen in her engine room. This ship boasted a military-grade hyperdrive.
"Oh, you honey."
Thousands of light years away, Tirawinza, High Priest of Yalicia, stood in the middle of Colony 3, surveying the damage from a Dawn terrorist raid. Not a raid to gain slaves, a raid to rescue them. Tirawinza made a soft whuffling sound that was his species' equivalent of a chuckle.
"Stupid raiders! Stupid to think the pilgrims would renounce the exultation for freedom!"
Only 2 pilgrims out of the 200 in the vicinity of the invasion had run to join the invaders. And then, Tirawinza's expression darkened. She had stepped forward to address the assembled pilgrims. He remembered her very well. Pilgrim 921, birth name Bria Theron, a Corellian and a traitor. Bria had stepped forward and argued with the pilgrims, telling them the truth about the exaltation, that someday they'd thank her. Then she'd ordered her troops to turn stun beams on the crowd. The group of Corellians had gotten away with nearly 100 prime slaves. Tirawinza cursed softly.
"Bria Theron!"
He couldn't decide which Corellian he hated more, Bria or that accursed Han Solo. Several days after Boba Fett's attempt to capture him, Han went to see Jabba and Jilliak to tell them that he would be scarce on Nar Shadda for a while. He decided to become Zavari's assistant during her next tour. He had a feeling Boba Fett wouldn't be easily discouraged, and it wouldn't hurt to get off Nar Shadda for the next few months. Jabba responded with impatient cries, ordering him to prepare the Star Jewel for an immediate trip to Nal Hutta. The emissaries sent from the Dasilajic and the Basadi Khajiits had convened a meeting of the Hutt Khajiits for the next day. Han could leave if he must, after the conference.
And, Captain Solo, you must be prepared to give us your smoothest flight,
Jabba cautioned.
My aunt is in a delicate condition, and she must not be jostled.
Han glanced around for another hut, but saw only Jilliak. Your aunt? I beg your pardon, Lord Jabba? There will be three huts for me to transport?
No, human!
Jabba was impatient.
Jilliak and myself. Don't you have eyes? Don't you notice her skin texture? Her condition is plain.
Han looked over at Jilliak and suddenly realized that the hut did appear different. Warty excrescences had erupted on the being's face, and purplish patches mingled with the greenish one on the leathery tan skin. Jilliak also appeared bigger and rather lethargic. Lord Jilliak, are you feeling... Han began, only to have Jabba round on him with withering scorn.
Human idiot! Can't you see that my Lord Jilliak is now Lady Jilliak? She is expecting...
Durga the Hutt lay stretched beside his parent on his repulsor sled during the afternoon session. This was the first Hutt conference to be held in Durga's short lifetime, and he was pleased that his parent had allowed him to attend. Durga watched as Jabba the Hutt wriggled forward to take the floor. Jabba was sharp. Durga had to grant him that.
Honored Hutt lords, listen to me,
Jabba said.
Basadi has grabbed such a large share of the spice trade and the slave trade that we must all make them see reason. What does it profit them to fill their own coffers if their policies bring disaster to our world? Disaster?
Eric's voice boomed out so deep and authoritative that Durga felt a ripple of pride. His parent was as fine a Hutt leader as had ever been born.
We had 187% profit in the past year. How could this possibly be construed to be anything but praiseworthy and honorable? If any one Hutt clan makes a point of having tremendous wealth, it may bring all of us to the attention of the Emperor,
Jabba pointed out.
And that, fellow Hutts, is an attention we do not want.
Durga heard the other Hutts murmuring and had to admit that Jabba had made a good point. When the Empire took a close interest in any one world, it invariably suffered. The Hutt lords were unable to reach a conclusion about Basadi's off-the-scale profits. The discussion rambled on, degenerated into personal insults, then ended with no conclusion. Much later that night, as both Hutts prepared to sleep, Jilliak turned to Jabba.
Eric is dangerous. I am more convinced of it than ever.
Jabba nodded.
He is a forceful orator, cousin. An orator who must be deprived of his voice, or Dasilajic will suffer even more,
Jilliak said soberly. He was silent for a moment, then said,
I am thinking that this is our chance to strike at Eric's weak spot. His weak spot? Yes, cousin.
Jilliak went on.
Eric has a weak spot, and it has a name. And that name is... Teroenda,
Jabba said. When Teroenda boarded Kibik's space yacht for the trip back to Yalisha, he was in a very bad mood. The High Priest still smarted from the financial review he'd been forced to sit through. Eric had questioned every expenditure, carped about every extra credit. Grumpily, Teroenza reached out and turned on his comm unit. Words in Huttese formed on the screen even before he could key in his personal code. Eyes widening, Teroenza read the following words. This message will vanish in 60 seconds. Attempting to save it will destroy your comm unit. Memorize the following comm code and reply to it. A complicated comm code followed. Intrigued, Teroenza memorized the code. As promised, in 60 seconds it blinked off, to be replaced by the words, What do you want most? Perhaps we can help each other. The message, of course, was unsigned, but Tirowenza had a good idea of who had sent it. As he sat watching it blink off, to be replaced by his comm unit's standard greeting, Tirowenza realized what this meant. Would he reply to the message? Was he a traitor? What did he want most? Bria Theron sat at her desk at the largest Imperial military base on Corellia, watching the screen of her datapad as she updated the food requisition lists for all troops stationed in the Corellian system. The Empire was definitely building up strength in this sector. Did that mean the Imperial commanders were anticipating some kind of rebellion here in the Corellian system? She found herself wondering how long her group could manage to hold off the Empire if it attacked in force. 2 days? A week? In the end, they'd all be slaughtered. She knew that. Their small group of rebels was growing every month as the people of her world grew restive at being ground beneath Palpatine's relentless heel. But there was no way they were ready to take on the Imperial forces. Bria was worried that her entire homeworld would wind up as a police state. Corellia had always been an independent, proud world that governed itself. So far, the Emperor had not appointed an Imperial governor to usurp all power on Corellia, but that didn't mean he wouldn't someday. The Empire did not allow pride or independence in the worlds it claimed. Bria's fingers tightened on the edge of her desk. She hated the Empire, but even more than the Empire, she hated slavery. Having been a slave on Yalicia, though at the time she'd called herself a pilgrim, Bria was determined to do everything she could to destroy the Empire that allowed slavery, that used and owned beings. When that task was done, she would devote whatever remained of her life to freeing every slave in the galaxy. Bria hoped that soon she'd have more than bureaucratic lists of supply requisitions to relay to her group. Ever since she'd taken this job last month, she'd been careful to wear the most flattering hairstyles and makeup, hoping that her looks would bring her to the attention of a high-ranking Imperial officer. Her efforts were paying off, too. Just yesterday, Admiral Trefaren had stopped by her desk to ask her if she would accompany him to an Imperial reception that was being held by the Corellian government. "Admiral Trefaren might be our key to learning more about these new Imperial weapons and ships we've heard rumors of," Bria thought. She'd dance with him, give him admiring glances, and keep her ears open for every scrap of information. Han Solo was feeling more wounded than he had at any time since Bria Theron had left him. He sat on the edge of the bed in a hotel room, reading Zavary's message on his datapad. It said, "Dear Solo, I can't stand goodbyes, so I'm not going to put either of us through one. The tour is over, and I'm off for a short rest before taking to the road again. I thought about asking you to go with me, but I think it's better that I make a clean break now. The last 6 months have been wonderful. Traveling across the galaxy with you as my stage assistant, and more, has been among the best times I can recall. I've grown very fond of you, dear. Too fond. You know me by now. I can't afford to get too fond of anyone. That would be dangerous for both of us. Caring too much about another person makes you soft, makes you vulnerable. In my line of business, I can't afford that. I'm going to miss you more than I can say. Take care of yourself, Han, and take care of Chewie. Devotion like that is rare. Love, Zavary."
Blast! Han thought, not sure whether what he was feeling was anger or profound regret. Some mixture of both, he guessed. He sighed. If only I'd known she was planning this, I could have talked to her. Already he missed her smile, her affection, her kisses. He sighed again, then rose from the bed. Zavary was gone. Okay, he thought, reaching for his clothes. Show's over. Time to go back to the real world.
When they got back to the smuggler's moon, Han was surprised to realize that it felt like coming home. He and Chewie went to see Mako first. "So, Mako, you seen Lando?" He tried to seem casual. "He's still got that old clunker of his, the Millennium Falcon?"
"He's bought himself a used spaceship lot," Mako said.
"Well, I'm in the market for a ship to lease," Han said. "Guess I'll pay Lando a visit, see what he's got."
"Better see Jabba first," Mako advised. "He's put the word out that as soon as you came back, to send you on."
Jabba was so pleased to see Han that he actually wriggled down off his dais and undulated toward the Corellian.
Han, my boy, you've returned.
Han nodded and decided not to bow. Jabba had obviously missed him. It was nice to be on less subservient footing with the Hutt Lord. Hello, Jabba, Your Excellency. How's business?
Han, I must admit that I have missed you. We lost a ship in the Maw, and it cost Desiljuk dearly. We need you, Han.
Well, this time you're going to have to pay me more, Jabba, Han said resolutely. Chewie and me are about to lease our own ship.
Fine, fine,
Jabba said. But Jabba, I gotta tell you, Han said. There's still a bounty on my head. If I get any hints that Boba Fett is back on my trail, I ain't hanging around here. I'll operate out of Smuggler's Run. Even Fett isn't dedicated enough to head into the Run.
Lord Eric wishes to see you, Your Excellency, Gnarthos, Tirwenza's majordomo, said. He's waiting in your office.
Lord Eric and his offspring Durga had come for a special inspection tour of the Elysian operation. Tirwenza had been proud to show them the progress they'd made, the new factories, the productive pilgrims, the steadily growing supply of valuable spice that they'd ship off-world. But the more Tirwenza had shown the Hutt Lord, the more Eric had nitpicked. The High Priest was beginning to feel a little desperate. Tirwenza entered his office, trying not to let his nervousness show.
I am here, Your Excellency,
he said to Eric. The Hutt Lord looked up at Tirwenza.
We need to have a talk, High Priest,
he said gruffly.
Yes, Your Excellency.
I'm canceling your vacation, High Priest,
Eric said.
I want you to stay here and bring Kibik up to speed on all Elysian operations. His level of ignorance is shameful, and it is your fault. Tirwenza, you have forgotten who are the true lords of Elysia. You have grown arrogant and think yourself in command. This is not permissible. You must learn your place, High Priest. When you have learned to serve, to take the subservient role in governing this world, you will be rewarded.
Resentment boiled up inside the Talanda Till, but with a great effort of will, he managed to conceal his reaction.
It shall be as you say, Your Excellency, he murmured.
Tirwenza's hot rage boiled and bubbled as he walked back to his quarters, but by the time he reached them, he was calm again. Strangely, coldly calm. After a few more minutes of consideration, the High Priest reached for his comm unit. The code he'd memorized all those months ago came readily. And then he keyed in the following message. I am willing to talk. What do you have to offer? The man in the Mandalorian armor walked steadily into Jabba the Hutt's throne room in his palace on Tatooine. The room was filled with booming music and swaying bodies, but when Jabba caught sight of the bounty hunter, the room quieted at a wave of his hand.
Do you know why I have summoned you, bounty hunter?
So I'll hunt down and kill someone, said Boba Fett. That's why people contact me.
No,
Jabba said.
I will pay you to not kill someone until further notice.
1 week after leasing his ship, the Bria, from Lando, Han Solo was cursing the little Sorosub freighter, himself, Lando, and the universe in general. Nearly every time they took her out on a test run, some new problem surfaced. Han mentioned his ship woes to Mako, who introduced his friend to yet another of his acquaintances.
Master Starship Mechanic Shug Ninx meet Han Solo and his partner Chewbacca. They got a ship, need some work.
Shug Ninx was humanoid, but though he looked mostly human, Han could tell immediately that he had some alien blood. He was tall, with spiky brownish-blonde hair and pale blue eyes. The skin on the lower half of his face was mottled with pale spots, and his hands only had two fingers, plus an extra joint in his opposable thumb. It gave him great dexterity when fiddling with machinery. Han held out his hand, smiling. Pleased to meet you, Shug, he said. Think you can help me get this bucket of bolts up and running?
We sure can give it a try, Shug said. Bring her over to my space barn today and we'll check her out.
Over the next few weeks, Han and Chewie helped Shug Ninx fix up their new ship. The two smugglers worked each day until they were exhausted, tinkering and learning the intricacies of starship repair from the master mechanic. Han was so tired by all of the work, he almost quit going out. But one evening, on impulse, he stopped off for a drink in a local tavern in the Corellian sector. The blue light was mostly a dive, but Han kind of liked the dark little place. While he was sitting at the bar, sipping an Alderaanian ale, a fracas erupted in the back. Han jumped to his feet at the sound of a woman's curse, then a man's drunken growl.
Hey, baby, that's no way for a lady to talk!
I'm no lady, a woman said in an angry voice. Peering into the dimness, Han could make out two struggling figures, hear the sounds of a scuffle, then a slap. When he reached the back of the dimly lit bar, Han found a short, spindly smuggler and thug for hire he knew only as Jump, moaning and writhing at the feet of a tall woman. As Han approached, she turned on him.
Mind your own business, man!
Han took a step back before her flashing orange eyes. She was as tall as he was, with skin the color of Lando's, and a wild frizz of black curls standing out from her head like a brelet's mane. She looked tougher than neutronium, and mad, clear through. The Corellian hastily put up both hands in a gesture of peace.
Hey, I'm not one to interfere. Looks like the situation's been handled to me.
I can take care of myself,
she snapped, striding past him on her way toward the front entrance. Her boot heels clicked on the scarred floor. Intrigued, Han jogged up to the front of the blue light. Then, careful not to stand between her and the front door, he gestured to a couple of empty bar stools. So, do you have to rush off? Can I buy you a drink? He asked. She studied him for a long moment, her anger fading.
Maybe, she said.
Sticking out a gauntleted hand, she said, Salazend. Han Solo. They shook. Then Han threw a leg over the nearest bar stool. They talked, and Han discovered that Sala was also a smuggler, newly come to Nar Shadda.
I've got a ship, she said. The Rim Runner. But it needs some work.
Hey, Han said, do I know a place for you? My ship's getting some work done, too. This guy's a real wizard, name of Shug Ninx.
I'm a pretty good mechanic myself, Sala said. I'd like to meet your friend. I'm going back to work on the Bria tomorrow morning, Han said. If you like, why not meet me? We can go over to Shug's space barn together.
She gave him a measuring glance, then smiled, a slow, amused smile.
I've got a better idea, she said. You come home with me tonight. Can you cook?
Han's eyes widened. Well, talk about being direct. He smiled back at her, his slow, lopsided grin. Sure, he said. One of my best friends was a cook, so dinner it is. Then maybe breakfast? Over the next few weeks, Han and Sala continued to see each other, and their relationship developed and grew closer. By the time they'd been dating for a month, Han was fixing her breakfast, and everyone recognized them as a couple. Soon, Sala was a regular at Shug's space barn, where all the smugglers hung out, fixing their ships and swapping stories. One day, when Han was up on the top hull of the Bria, working on the main deflector, Chewbacca roared that someone wanted to see him. Han scuttled down the ladder to find a youth standing there, a handsome kid with brown hair and brown eyes. He reminded Han a little of himself when he'd been in his late teens. The young man held out a hand.
Han Solo? It's an honor to meet you. I'm Jarek. Jarek Solo.
Han's eyes widened as he shook hands.
Solo?
He asked, blankly.
Yeah,
the kid answered.
Solo. I think we must be related.
Han smiled. Could be, he said. So why'd you look me up?
Well, I'd like to learn piloting, the boy replied. And I hear you're the best. I'll work if you'll teach me, sir. I promise I'll work hard.
We'll see, Han said. At first he invited the youngster to hang around because he wanted to keep an eye on him. Han didn't believe that the boy was from Corellia. He just didn't look right somehow. He asked Roa, as the senior smuggler, whether he knew anything about a young man named Jarek. It took a month, but Roa was able to discover that young Jarek was a street kid, born and raised in the depths of Nar Shadda. His parentage was unknown, probably even to him. When Han knew for sure that the youth had lied to him, he considered sending the kid packing, but by that time he'd gotten used to having him around. The worshipful attention was flattering. And after all, Han rationalized, It wasn't as though he himself had never told a lie to get his foot in the door. After discussing the matter with Chewbacca, Han decided not to tell the youngster that they knew his name wasn't Solo. It was Chewie who pointed out that it obviously meant a lot to Jarek to finally have a surname. Wookiees were very family-oriented, and Chewie felt sorry for the boy. Han found them a new apartment, a bigger one, in a better part of the Corellian section. He was frequently not at home, staying over at Sala's place, so he allowed Jarek to spend the night so Chewbacca would have company. Life, Han reflected, was good. It had been at least 2 months since any bounty hunters had surfaced, and there hadn't been any sightings of Boba Fett. He and Chewie were earning a decent living, and they had a ship of their own. He had friends and somebody special in his life, somebody who could talk the language of smugglers. Han was as content as he'd ever been. Jabba and Jilliak waited expectantly aboard Jabba's yacht, the Star Jewel, for a specially invited visitor. Finally, they heard footsteps coming down the corridor. The door opened, and Tirawenza, High Priest of Yalicia, entered. Jilliak spoke.
Let us get right down to business. Arrak has become a nuisance. A nuisance we would like to dispense with.
Tirawenza snorted.
No matter how high production is, he is dissatisfied, and he has reduced the bounty on Han Solo. When he did that, I could no longer support him.
I want no one to suspect murder,
Jilliak said matter-of-factly.
It must be subtle.
Subtle,
Tirawenza murmured, absently stroking his horn.
I have a possible plan,
Jilliak said.
A substance that Arrak can ingest. It concentrates in the brain tissues of higher life forms. Over a long period of ingestion, the victim becomes addicted to the poison, to the point where sudden cessation of the substance will cause withdrawal symptoms so severe they will result in either death or such massive brain damage that Arrak will be of no further harm to any of us.
But how do we get him to take it?
Jabba asked.
Your Excellencies, I can manage that.
Tirawenza was bouncing up and down in his sling like a youngster.
Nala tree frogs, surely they would work.
Tirawenza went on to explain about the Basati Lord's predilection for the amphibians.
I could raise the frogs in water, to which I have added your poison,
Tirawenza said.
From the time when they are small wigglers, they could be swimming through water containing your substance. The Nala frog's tissues would be riddled with the poison, and Arrak would consume them greedily. As the months go by, I increase the concentration in the water, and Arrak gradually consumes more and more of the poison. Over time, he becomes addicted to it. Then, when he's thoroughly dependent on the substance...
He made a quick, yanking away gesture.
No more poison! Clean frogs!
Jabba leaned forward.
I say we proceed. Tirawenza's scheme fits all our requirements. I will transmit the first of your payments,
Jilliak said.
You must tell me where you want the credits sent.
Tirawenza's bulging eyes took on a crafty gleam.
Rather than credit, I would mostly like items for my collection. That way I can hide the payments. When I need credit, I can sell off a piece, and no one will be the wiser.
Very well, Jilliak said. You must provide us with a list of acceptable items.
Excellent, said Tirawenza. We have a deal.
After Tirawenza had left, Jabba and Jilliak began planning their strategy. When Arrak was gone, they would gradually take over the Yalician operation. The thought made them extremely cheerful. Their good mood was broken, however, by Jabba's Twi'lek majordomo, Lob Jarido, who appeared, wringing his hands.
Most disturbing news from Imperial Center. The pilot has recorded it. If your excellencies will turn on your holo projector.
The three-dimensional scene built before them, and the Hutts recognized their local moth, Sarn Shild. This was obviously a formal press conference setting.
Citizens of the inner and outer rim territories,
he said, his pale features set in grim lines,
our emperor has called upon all of his loyal sectors to aid him in cutting off the trafficking in illegal weaponry. We all know that the source of much of the illegal gun running and drug trafficking emanates from Hut Space. To this end, I am calling on all citizens of our sector to support me as I shut down the Hut Scourge. Law and order will prevail once more in our territories.
The hollow faded out on Shild's ringing last words. Both Huts looked at each other for a long moment.
Obviously, he is now more afraid of Palpatine than he is of us, Jabba said.
We shall have to teach him his error,
Jilliak said.
We must send Shild a message.
By the next morning, the Hut Lords had provided Han with excellent faked IDs, identifying him as one Jobek John, official Hut diplomatic envoy, and a speedy little Corellian courier vessel named Quicksilver. Moff Sarn Shild was a tall, pale, ascetic-seeming man with oiled black hair and a thin, pointy mustache. A line appeared between his brows as he quickly scanned the holocube's message.
Look here, John, Shild said when he'd finished reading it. I wish I could offer Nal Hutta more assurances, but as I told you before, I have no choice. The Emperor has called upon all Imperial worlds to tighten down on smuggling, gun running, and other illegal activities. My sector contains Hut Space, and unfortunately, the Hut reputation for dishonesty is so well known that I cannot possibly cover for them. I will, however, promise Nal Hutta no armed reprisals if they cooperate.
Cooperate in what way?
Do their best to become loyal, law-abiding citizens of the Empire.
That'll be the day, Han thought. What about Nar Shada? He asked, unable to help himself. Fear for his friends made his mouth dry.
I shall have to make an example of Nar Shada, Shild said. By the time I am finished with the smuggler's moon, it will no longer support the smuggling industry. Its inhabitants will be lucky if it can still support sentient life.
Han tried to conceal his shock. What are we going to do?
Shild shook his head. And now I'm afraid I must depart.
Sarn, came a voice from behind the door leading into the next room. Han froze.
That voice!
The door opened, and a woman stood there, smiling.
Sarn, darling, she said. We must hurry.
Han turned his head, and their eyes met. For the first time in 6 years. Bria Theron. This time there was no mistake. Bria stood there dressed in a flowing silken gown that made her seem just as much of an ornament as anything else in Shild's palatial home. She was stunningly beautiful.
Shild gestured at Bria. Master Jobek John of Nal Hutta, my niece, Bria.
Only Han's years of playing Sabacc saved him as Bria composedly held out her hand.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Master John.
Han bowed over her hand suavely. He bowed formally to Shild.
Thank you for your time, Your Excellency,
and strode resolutely from the room. Later that same night, much later, Bria Theron lay in her small bunk aboard the Moff's yacht, muffling her sobs in her pillow. Every time she recalled the look in Han's eyes, she wanted to wail aloud. It was only too obvious that he'd thought the worst, that she was Shild's concubine. Sobs shook her. That was what he was supposed to think, after all. That was what Sarn Shild wanted everyone to think. In truth, the Moff's sexual preferences did not run to human females. Bria traveled with him as a lovely show object, to be displayed to Imperial officials, just as Shild would display any trophy. And now Han had seen her and thought the worst. Even all the information Bria had been able to funnel to the rebel movement back on Corellia couldn't ease the grief and shame she felt. Han and Chewie reported to Jilliak and Jabba the moment they returned to Nar Shada. The Hutts were not pleased to hear that Sarn Schild was no longer in their pay.
"We shall have to do some investigating," Gilliak said. "Come back in 2 hours, Captain Solo."
Mako was even more upset than Gilliak and Jabba when he heard about the situation. "If the imps are out to teach Nar Shada a lesson, then a whole lot of people are going to die." Han reported back to Gilliak's audience chamber in a very troubled frame of mind. The Hutt leader fixed him with a somber gaze.
"What you have said is true. We are taking measures to ensure our safety on Nal Hutta."
"But what about Nar Shada?" Han wondered. It was a pretty good bet that the self-centered Hutts would give the smuggler's moon barely a thought in comparison to protecting their safety and that of their homeworld.
"We have discovered that Schild's fleet is under the command of Admiral Winstall Greylanks," Gilliak said. "He was in charge of several Imperial fleets doing customs patrol in the past, and we have confirmed that, under the right circumstances, he can be bribed. With that in mind, we want you to go and see him, Captain," Gilliak continued. "We want you to negotiate with him on our behalf. We will get you a uniform, forged orders, and a military ID. You can get in to speak with Greylanks. Take him a small gift from us."
"Credits are what he'll understand," Han said. "Lots of them."
"We have been delegated to act on behalf of all Nal Hutta," Gilliak said. "Money is no object to ensuring the Admiral's cooperation."
"But," Han was thinking fast, "you can't expect him to not attack. The Moff would notice he hadn't fulfilled his orders."
"We Hutts are not military-minded sentients, Captain," Gilliak responded. "What kinds of things would bring about the result we want? An Imperial defeat, without it being obvious that we paid Greylanks off."
"Well," Han thought hard, "maybe he'll sell us his battle plan. With that in hand, we could create a defense that would put all of our ships in just the right spot to, maybe, defeat the Imperial fleet. Maybe. Especially if Greylanks had been paid to cut and run as soon as he could justify a withdrawal."
"When can you leave?"
Jabba wanted to know.
"Time is short."
"Get me the uniform and the IDs, and I'll leave tonight," Han said. "All I have to do is get a haircut." It felt very strange to be back in uniform again, Han decided, as he walked casually along the permacrete of the Imperial base on Teth 3 days later. Han quickly headed for the nearest turbolift. He boarded one, then was quickly shuffled into the back as others crowded in on the next deck. Han was staring straight ahead when he suddenly realized, to his horror, that he knew the young officer standing near the door. It was Tedris Bajalan, the young lieutenant who had so systematically stripped Han's uniform of rank during his court-martial. Han surreptitiously eased himself as far to the right as he could, behind a taller man, crossing his fingers that Tedris wouldn't turn around. The lieutenant didn't, and he got off in the next floor. Han found Greylanks' office, squared his shoulders, and felt in his pocket for the Hutt gift. It was a lovely and quite valuable man's ring, platinum, set with a large and flawless Bothan glitterstone. "State your business, Lieutenant," ordered Greylanks' assistant, whose name badge identified him as Kern Fallon. "Sir, I have a message for the Admiral. It's a personal message, sir." Han was taking a calculated risk that Greylanks was as morally corrupt as many of the high-ranking Imperial officers he'd encountered. Fallon raised an eyebrow. "I beg your pardon, Lieutenant?" Han sensed that he was being tested and didn't change expression. "Sir, she told me to give the message only to the Admiral, sir."
"She?"
Fallon's voice fell until he was whispering.
"You mean Melissa?"
Fallon bustled inside and Han allowed himself a smug smile. Pure sabacc, he thought. It had been a fairly safe bet that good old Admiral Greylanks had a mistress or two on the side. Moments later, he was in the Admiral's large inner office. Greylanks was a stocky man of medium height, with thinning gray hair and a small, squarish mustache. He was standing behind his desk when Han entered, looking somewhat alarmed. Han took a deep breath and said, "Sir, what I have to convey can only be said in utter privacy, sir." Grelank studied him for a moment, then beckoned Han closer and slapped a control beneath his desk.
"Privacy screen on and jamming activated," he said.
Han held out the ring. "Admiral, I bring you a gift from the Hutt Lords of Nal Hutta. They want to deal."
"My orders are clear, and I cannot go against them," Grelank said. "I'm afraid we cannot do business, young man."
Han tensed, but made himself stay calm. "Sir, what are your orders?" he asked. "Perhaps we can think of something that will benefit us both and yet leave you free of any charge of wrongdoing." Grelank gave a short, bitten-off laugh.
"Hardly, young man. My orders are to enter the Hutt system, execute order base Delta Zero upon the smuggler's moon, Nar Shadda, and then blockade Nal Hutta and Nal Hekka until the Hutts agree to allow full customs inspections and a complete military presence on their worlds."
Han swallowed, his mouth dry. Base Delta Zero was an order that called for the decimation of a world. All life, all vessels, all systems, even droids were to be captured or destroyed. His worst nightmare come true. "Admiral, have you completed your battle plan?" Han asked.
"My staff has been working on it," Grelank said, "and I'm reviewing it now." "Why?"
"The Hutts would like to purchase the detailed plan, sir," Han said. "Name your price." Grelank paced slowly around the office.
"You're saying that your Hutt employers would pay me what I ask for my battle plan?" he said.
"Yes, sir," Han said. "For that, and for taking the first strategically justifiable opportunity to withdraw your squadron, we'll take care of the rest." Grelank thought some more.
"Very well, young man. We have a deal," he said. "I want my payment in gems. Small, easy to dispose of, and not terribly traceable. I shall make you a list of the types and weights I wish."
"Fine, sir," Han said. "You do that.
Sit down. Over there."
Grelank pointed to a couch across his office.
"I'll finish reviewing the battle plan, and then you can have it."
Grelank worked for nearly 2 hours, then finally stood up and beckoned Han into the privacy field again.
"Here it is," he said. "Nothing terribly inspired, standard Imperial tactics, but eminently workable. We should be able to cut any smuggler fleet to ribbons, I'm afraid."
"That's our concern," Han said. "You just stick to this, Admiral," he indicated the battle plan, "and when you can justifiably withdraw your squadron, you do it. I'll be back to pay you." Then he executed a perfect about-face and strode from the room.
"All right, you sentient, settle down,"
roared Mako Spence. His amplified voice resounded off the walls of the large auditorium at the Chance Castle, where Han had first seen Zavary perform. The hotel casino had generously donated the space when Mako had called a meeting of representatives from every enclave, both humanoid and non-humanoid, on Nar Shadda.
"Okay," said Mako. "Fact number one. Within a week, a squadron of Imperial vessels is going to be dispatched from Teth, sent by our own beloved Moff, Sarn Shild. The squadron has orders to wipe us out. The place will be a smoking ruin."
A murmur of fear ran through the auditorium as the assembled smugglers tried to assimilate Mako's words.
"Fact number two," Mako went on. "We're on our own, folks. The Hutts have just spent a bundle of credits installing brand new planetary defense shields so they can hide behind them on Nal Hutta while the Imp fleet uses up their ammo on us." "Okay, fact three. We ain't exactly helpless. We have it on good authority that the Imp squadron doesn't include anything with super heavy firepower. No Star Destroyers. That's good news for us. That means we can fight back."
Mutters of consternation swelled, mingled with yells of determination.
"Yeah, we'll fight!"
Mako grinned.
"Hey, my thoughts exactly.
I intend to fight this fleet, and if it's just me out there and my ship, so be it. Nobody, nobody!
This time, the cheers from the crowd were deafening. Mako motioned for quiet.
Okay, folks. First thing we need is for everyone with some battle experience, come on down here to the front.
Over the next several minutes, about 40 sentients, most of them humanoid, made their way down front.
Okay, folks. We'll post notice of meetings or drills outside the auditorium, okay? Now let's have a round of applause for our brave volunteers here.
Cheers resounded. It was obvious that the crowd of sentients felt tremendously better just knowing they were going to do something instead of tamely waiting to be slaughtered. After Mako dismissed the crowd, he and Han headed for one of the meeting rooms in the back of the casino, where they were joined by the rest of the smuggler High Command, as Mako and Han had jokingly dubbed their group. Chewbacca, Roa, Shug Ninx, Salazend, Lando Calrissian, Rick Duel, and Sinewy Anna Blue made up Mako's elite group of experienced smugglers.